So let's start this month, first month's case where I dive into a young man, 38-year-old male, who presents to the emergency room by EMS and then ultimately has doesn't make it, dies within a short period of time. So we're going to dive into this case this month, and we're going to touch on a few things. If you don't know who I am, I'm Advocate Maggie. I've been a nurse for 24 years. I've not only worked inside hospital settings, I've been an expert nurse and an administrative nurse for those of you who don't know me. So I have written up reports in both of those settings. So I am going to help you and guide you through some of this and give you some gold nuggets, some tips, some tricks as I go through this case review with you. So let's just get started. So Michael is a 38-year-old male who presents to the emergency room. His partner calls. Because he d is not has got ultra mental status and just doesn't appear to what his partner is saying to be doing well. 911 is called. They pick Michael up, presents to the emergency room where the staff notes he doesn't look like he's, doing well. He looks ill, increasing work of breathing. 438, the triage nurse accepts report from the paramedics, where it's noted that the patient is tachypneic, tachycardic, O2 sat in the 91 on 3 liters, which was just transferred from EMS. Patient, she recognizes the patient's not doing well per what the medical record says, drops a IV, so places a line, and the patient draws blood for sampling, cardiac enzymes, places the patient on a monitor. So not only just cardiac enzymes, CMP, CBC, some basic lab work that is done for a lot of the critical care patients. She does that per the protocol, including a chest X-ray, calls the primary nurse because she has immediately roomed this patient with EMS and lets the primary nurse now know that the patient's in the room and needs to be seen. Primary nurse comes in, hooks the patient up, does some vitals, does an assessment, cycles the blood pressure cuff. The patient's already hooked up to the monitor, still 91%, 3 liters. It's noted that the patient is still has altered mental status and the patient is 38 years old, and the partner reporting that that is a deviation, that his mentation right now is a deviation. He's normally alert and oriented times 3. Lab work's done, it's pending. Chest X-ray comes back, which confirms bilateral lower pneumonia, which was suspected. Blood cultures are drawn. ER doctor is called to let him or her know that that result has come back. Oftentimes, the nurse is called with that result, not uncommon. And then the doc is alerted as well, goes, looks at the chest X-ray. Blood cultures were ordered, antibiotics were ordered, and it looks like the hospitalist was consulted to admission to the step-down ICU. Roughly, that's about roughly 5:30 when that starts. About 6:01, Michael's noted to have still altered mental status, using axillary muscles. All the labs are returned. Vitals are noted at 101 as the temp, 121 as the heart rate, 102 over 57 is the blood pressure. Respiratory rate is 24. Patient is tachypneic. O2 sat is 91% on 3 liters nasal cannula and oriented to person only. So roughly about 35, 36 minutes later, the hospitalist is noted to be seeing the patient, dictates a note, and admits the patient to the step-down ICU. Order is put in. Most of us know in this setting, we'd be going to the charge nurse, an order would be put on the bed board. Patient would be placed for admission on that floor, which that appears to have happened. At 7:18, reports called to the charge nurse up on the step-down unit. The charge nurse is taking the assignment and is in charge and is precepting a nurse. Roughly about 7:58, charge nurse documents a brief assessment. 808, the CNA documents Michael is resting comfortably in bed. Vital signs now are 102, 129 over 99. I'm sorry, heart rate's 129. The patient's tachycardic. Blood pressure is 99 over 59. Respiratory rate is 26. O2 sat is 91% on 3 liters nasal cannula. Also noted that his partner was at the bedside. An hour and a half later, patients noted by a nurse to by the primary nurse, charge nurse, and the nurse who's precepting another nurse to be sleeping based on the information that was received from the nursing assistant. 10:47, the phlebotomist goes in to draw cardiac enzymes, some additional labs noted for the 2300 lab. So for the 11 p.m. draw, there's video footage. Most of us don't often know that there's video footage of the hallways. So video footage is produced, which shows the phlebotomist going to the nurse's station and then going back to the room where it's noted on the video that Michael's partner is standing at the doorway. His demeanor is erratic, and it seems like he's trying to catch the attention of anyone who's passing by, but it's late. It's, 11 p.m. 11:16, vital signs are taken by the CNA, as noted to be 102.3 as the temperature. 136 is the heart rate. Patient's still tachycardic. 98 over 53 is the pressure. 28%. Patient's tachypneic. 20, I'm sorry, 28 is the respiratory rate. 90% on 3 liters nasal cannula is now their O2 set. At 11:36, patient is found by radiology to be unresponsive and not breathing. At that time, a code is called. There's no documentation of anyone initiating CPR then until the code team arrives. The code team initiates CPR, where ROSC, return of spontaneous circulation, is obtained roughly 22 minutes later per the poorly documented code sheet. The patient's transferred to the ICU, where the cooling measures are initiated per the ACLS protocol, sedated, pressors, ventilated. Has a long course, patient septic, unable to extubate. They do weaning trials, CPAP the patient, ends up having to be trached and pegged, ends up going into DIC, develops pressure ulcers, has a stroke, has a very prolonged ICU stay spanning from January to May. May 4th, it is noted that Michael does pass. And June 10th, there's litigation. There's a petition filed in court by the partner and the family for wrongful death. So let's look at some of this. So, were there deviations from the standard of care? There absolutely were. So, it goes on to be noted that the nurse never goes into the room. It is noted later in depositions that the nurse has more likely than not too many patients. She's precepting and in charge and has her own patient assignment, has 4 patients of her own. And that's kind of leading some of these failures to act or initiate because thinking, okay, that's just a 38-year-old male with pneumonia who's being dramatic, as noted by witness statements as being overheard by the staff. Let me say that again. Witness statement produced later in depositions. Overheard the staff saying that they thought that Michael and his partner were just being dramatic. Later produced. Remember that. I don't want you to, I don't want that to leave you. Which matters and where you say it matters. So remember that. So some deviations from the standard of care. Can this reported to a board of nursing? It sure can. Get it reported to a board of medicine? I don't know. Was there any deviation in the medical treatment? I don't believe that there was. Could there be civil litigation? A wrongful death? Yes, absolutely. Criminal litigation? That would more likely than not be a far stretch unless there was able to be proven that there was willful, wanton negligence, which in this case might be a far stretch. But again, I'm not a lawyer. This is just in my opinion, what I've seen in my experience. So, under the Board of Nursing, we are required to do a comprehensive assessment, different than a focused assessment. An RN does a comprehensive assessment and an LPN does a focused assessment. So, under the rules and regulations that dictate our professional practice, Michael did have assessed by an RN to initiate some interventions. This patient is decompensating. The patient is clearly decompensating. A 38-year-old male with altered mental status, and their partner is telling you that they're altered. That's a gift. Anytime a family is telling you there's deviations, listen to what they are saying. They know that patient way better than you do. A 38-year-old male who's altered is signs of decompensation. I have taught ACLS. Is that compensated or uncompensated? That's uncompensated. He's got altered mental status. He's tachycardic. He's borderline hypo, right? He's dropping his O2 sat. So you have a duty as a nurse to do a comprehensive assessment within your scope of practice, whether that's a comprehensive assessment or a focused assessment. And if you're an LPN, then you need to get the RN to do the comprehensive assessment, but it's still your duty to go up the chain of command and get that care that the patient and the assessment the patient needs. So let's talk about some legal actions and consequences. So in civil cases, anyone can file a case, can reach out to a medical malpractice lawyer. Whether they take the case or not is going to be up to what they deem to be the facts. And basically, whether there's enough damages or they're able to get you enough damages that you're not putting out more money than you would ever be able to gain from this. Because there's other avenues that a person, someone who's seeking out civil litigation for a wrongful termination, can seek out if it's not negligent. So, but if it is negligent and the attorney feels like that it rises to many different things, but even worth taking it on, because if you spend more money and you're not going to get back, it's not responsible for that attorney nor yourself to spend that kind of money, nor the patients in the family into that. So anyone can file lawsuits alleging negligence, whether they get picked up or not. The judge gets to decide that. The attorney files a petition. The consequences could be financial, depending on the damages. And if a nurse or health provider is found negligent, then that can bleed over to that board, and you will be asked on your renewal or when you obtain a license. And oftentimes it would just automatically, I've seen this in cases where the nurse was found negligent in a civil case and then reported to the Board of Nursing in that state. So it can and will oftentimes cross over. You do have to report that stuff, to my knowledge, in every state. I do not know that not to be true, and make sure you're reading the language of your renewal and or your application. Criminal investigations, again, like I said, they can rise to that level, but it would have to show gross negligence and more often than not, and willful wanton deviations of a client, maybe an older adult, impaired, or a child. Now that may be true, but more often than not, it doesn't rise to the level of criminal. And in this case, I do not feel like it would rise to the level of criminal, willful, wanton, negligence. That it would lead to anything other than civil and administrative. So basically, the family gets money, or more often than not, the organization, the facility cuts them a check, Board of Nursing, Board of Medicine, whatever their respective discipline is, they'll have to stand there. But again, criminal, that's a far stretch, not as likely. So as far as protecting yourself, giving you some legal nursing, expert nursing tips, please document in real time whenever possible. Do not fraudulently document. If you did not assess the patient, do not document that you did that. Can you document something that someone else does if you see them do it? Yes, I teach in my charting class. If a patient gets admitted, any setting, and you're helping to do some tasks with another nurse, putting in a Foley, starting an IV, one person is documenting, maybe two people are tasking. I'm the one documenting, and I look over and I see Sally is starting a 20 gauge IV in the left forearm, flushing it, no problems. And there, I can see she blood returned, and that's what I'm documenting. And I see, and I'm assessing it. I can see it looks clean, dry, intact. I see the dressing on top of it, so I can document that Sally started the IV. Now, I shouldn't be documenting Sally's lung sounds. Sally can come back in and chart her own lung sounds, but I can document that task that was done. That is acceptable practice. What's not acceptable is fraudulently documenting, not going into that room. So noted on video that the nurse never went into the room and documented multiple times assessments that the patient never got from her. You can say the CNA reported something to you, but you can't fraudulently document that you assessed the patient when you did not do that. Those are violations of the Board of Nursing. Those are sanctionable conduct. Don't do that. If you did not really see the patient, just make sure that you're not documenting that, leading into making sure that you're not taking on an unsafe assignment and that you're leveraging the rules and regulations that dictate your professional practice to help you do that. So in the future, protecting your license, let's say in this case, what are some things that should have immediately done? Let's break down the nursing assistant. What was the duty of the nursing assistant? The duty of the nursing assistant was to go to the primary nurse, who was also the charge nurse, and if the patient needed immediate assistance or wasn't doing well, to alert that nurse. The CNA, the nursing assistant, the tech goes through training, general training, just like we all do, and more often than not has basic life support, has for sure had general orientation, is told, and there's a policy about rapid response and code blue, all held to that same standard. We all are. So the duty of that CNA, if the RN was not acting in that patient's best interest repeatedly, to move that up the chain of command. Well, she was the chain of command, primary nurse, charge nurse. So what was the other options of the CNA and or what has been taught to that CNA under chain of command and rapid and code blue, all of that? Calling possibly the house supervisor, going to the nurse manager, depending on this is days or nights, that can get a little tricky. More often than not, the staff does have the nurse manager's number, reaching out to the nursing director. If not, the house sup is the admin on duty and everyone has their number and can reach out to the house sup. If not, call a rapid. It's absolutely our duty and to call a rapid. Everyone is educated on that. And then basic life support. Can call a code. If nothing else, just call a code. It gets some additional people to assess that patient who clearly is not doing well. So that was the duty and the expectation of the nursing assistant. So let's move on to the RN. So as far as the RN who was in charge, precepting a nurse and taking assignment, there's so much wrong with that. First and foremost, we shouldn't be assuming more than one role. If you're in charge, you got a phone strapped to you, you're helping to land patients, admit, transfer, field calls from doctors and other nurses, it is not appropriate for you to be taking on a full assignment. If you fail to respond and or act, you cannot put up your right hand and say, most certainly not in front of the Board of Nursing, that they made me and or I was charged and primary. Well, why? 217.11.1 S and T, my own state, says, are you assigning and making an unsafe assignment? S is the assignment, T is me accepting, and you leverage the rules and regulations so that you're not having to take that additional assignment, that they're not making you take that additional assignment because no one can make you do that. Not to mention, it's the definition of medical malpractice if you quote unquote knowingly and willingly take on an unsafe assignment. And that's from attorney's lips to my ears. So let me say that again. It is the definition of medical malpractice if you knowingly and willingly take it on an unsafe assignment. So use that. So should have said, coming in, I see him on the board and I'm in charge and I got a primary assignment. I cannot do that. I can do one or the other, but I cannot do both in a respectful, professional manner. Precepting someone as well. That's a whole nother animal. You're taking on a whole nother responsibility. So coupling all those things together, charge, primary, and then precepting is the perfect storm. Not appropriate. Charge should not be precepting either unless it's an experienced nurse who's learning how to precept. That is an acceptable practice. And a nurse shouldn't be in charge unless they've been a nurse, in my opinion, for at least 5 years. You should have experience because, again, talking about some nursing tips. If you don't have the experience along with the education, training, and knowledge, that places you, puts you in a place where you can cause an error. So the accepting nurse Linda should have never been all of those roles. Private nurse also had a duty within a reasonable amount of time, especially given that the patient was altered and the vital signs, to at least lay eyes on that patient, walk into the room, do some vitals. And I'd immediately been like, ooh, I don't even know if you're appropriate to be in a step down unit. You need like Q1 hour neuro checks. I don't even know if this is appropriate setting. And or when I need to have the assignment changed to either having just two patients or three would be the max. Because if I'm doing Q1 or Q15 minute neuro checks on someone who has altered mental status, clearly decompensating, like what's happening? This picture is not getting any better, so not totally stable. So we might need to at least just move the patient up to the ICU for at least the first 24 hours to get them stabilized, get some antibiotics on board, because I fear that he's decompensating. And the accepting nurse had a duty to do a full comprehensive assessment, make that assessment, call the doctor, do an SBIR communication, situation background assessment recommendation, and just say, hey, sir, ma'am, I'm not sure about this picture. They are tachycardic, tachypneic, and they just don't look well. They are sick, as my girl Susan Davis says, and you'll see her in the case not in, in the subscription, the blog this month. Sick or not sick, this patient is sick, sir or ma'am, and we need to get them to a higher level of care. And where is that? The ICU. And that nurse had a duty to advocate for that patient to get to a higher level of care. So I hope that helps to break down a case for you. I hope that with those tips, making sure that you're documenting in real time and accurately, you're utilizing the resources in your environment to include the software in your favor with smart phrases within computerized documentation so that you're not like spending hours at the computer. If there's an adverse event, that you're documenting appropriately and then creating an incident report, which is different than something we document in the medical record. We do both of those, but they are different. The incident report is within the organization and is used for a root cause analysis. In this instance, the root cause analysis would have more likely than not led them to see that this patient was inappropriately placed in the step down unit with a nurse who had way too much happening and should have been in the ICU, would have recognized that they were decompensating. It probably would have went, because I worked in the ICU, would have been a controlled intubation instead of emergently intubating that patient who was having signs of decompensation. I hope that helps. Look forward to hearing your comments and your feedback. This is just the first one that I'm doing. This is just something I'm piloting. The other ones to come, more likely than not, will be a little bit different. I'm waiting on your feedback. Love to hear what you have to say, and thank you.